Blog Talk Radio.
Mind Shift Radio.
Gentlemen, welcome to another edition of Mind Shift Talk Radio. I'm your host, Stacey Emery, as always, joined by the phenomenal and dynamic Mind Shift crew, Mr. Billy Miller, the motivational minister, and Dr. Ayo Kedar, the natural Zen diva. It is Monday. It is Mind Shifting Monday. As always, we are excited to be here with another Mind Shifting conversation. For those of you that are joining us in the chat room, we thank you for taking part in the chat room. We definitely want to hear your comments, your questions, your concerns. So if you're joining us for the first time, make sure that you create a profile so that you can take part in tonight's conversation. I guarantee you it is going to be a very interesting one. And for those of you that have any questions or comments that you'd like to make on the air, please feel free to give us a call at area code 347-989-0206. But again, thank you for joining us for Mind Shift Talk Radio. This is real talk for real folks. You know, we discuss real issues affecting real people on a day-to-day basis. And so we ask that when you come to this show, when you listen to this show, that you come with an open mind and an open perspective, as there may be some things that are discussed that you may not necessarily agree with. But we guarantee that if you just hang with us for the hour, you will definitely have a mind shift by the end of this show. So, of course, as I said before, we encourage you to take part in this conversation. But again, I'm Stacey Emery, and I'm going to introduce you to my Mind Shift crew. So first, joining us on the line is the man of the hour, always holding it down, always keeping the peace on the show, our teacher, our brother, Mr. Billy Miller, the motivational minister. Hey, Billy.
Hey.
Hey, what's Earl. That's your name. What's going
hey,
on,
Earl,
Billy? Happy Monday.
Huh?
Oh, I'll see. Don't start. It's
we were
early
starting off
time.
Good. ACCB. There you go.
Let's keep the peace.
All right,
let's bring Isle. She's going to keep the peace for us. the holistic doctor herself, the natural Zen diva, the other lady of the show, always holding it down, playing devil's advocate and anything else we need her to be on the show, Dr. Ayo Kedar, the natural Zen diva. What's up, Dr. Ayo?
What's up? Hello.
You see how Billy's already starting with me? It's like we're not even 5 minutes into the show and he's already starting. I don't know what to do. Right. You would think like we're real brothers and sisters the way he carries on. It's just a mess. I'm serious. But Billy, okay, look. So you guys know we always start the show off and we do a recap from the previous week. And I am almost embarrassed to even do a recap. Just because Billy was clowning me, I had some technical issues last week on the show, and it was a little bootleg on my side, to say the least. But we had a great show in terms of the guests that were joining us. So Billy held it down. I mean, Dr. Ayo was absent. I was here, at least in the chat room, but no one could really hear me on the phone. And Billy was one of our featured guests. So Billy was discussing his new project, his highly anticipated book, you know, Life of Righteousness, and he had to be the host as well. So he was the host and the guest. And then we had Miss Charlotte Hunt also discussing her book. And Billy, you got to help me with her book because it's a long title. I know it's Dream Madly,
Pursue Wildly.
Uh-huh. Trust what?
Completely.
Trust completely. That's the part I missed. Dream madly.
Pursue wildly
and trust completely. I got it, Charlotte. I got it. But, yeah, so they both talked about their books. You know, we talked about transforming your life with Billy Miller and Charlotte Hunt. I mean, they just broke it down. Billy, you were awesome. You know, as much as I mess with you and you mess with me and we tease each other, but I have to say – but you held it down last week. So kudos to you.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much. We do what Woo-hoo! We do.
Yeah, Billy held it down. I got to give you your props on that one. And for those of you that may have, you know, missed the show, encourage you to go back and check out the replay at mindshifttalkradio.com and just check out the replay for Transforming Your Life with Billy Miller and Charlotte Hunt. And also you can find the links on Billy's page as well on Facebook, you know, facebook.com/Billy Miller. And then also his website, BillyMiller.com, and Billy is B-I-L-L-I-E, so BillyMiller.com. But definitely check out last week's show. So we have another phenomenal show this week, and we have a new guest that is going to be joining us this week. And she's new to Mindshift Talk Radio, but we're excited to have her here because of who she is. And I'm going to tell you who she is. Tonight's guest is Sherilyn Vaughn. Now, Sherilyn Vaughn, for those of you that are not familiar with her, and she's going to tell you a little bit more about herself in a minute, but I do want to tell you that Sherilyn Vaughn is a certified transformation coach, okay, and she's the CEO of Unveiling the Mask Enterprises. So that's intriguing in itself, Unveiling the Mask Enterprises. But she creates and promotes living in an authentic and balanced life by giving individuals the tools and the resources and the assistance that they need in order to live their best life. And so she's going to be here tonight to have somewhat of a controversial conversation with us, and I'll let her tell you a little bit more about what she'll be discussing. But first, without any further ado, I want to introduce you to tonight's guest, Ms. Sherilyn Vaughn. Hey, Sherilyn, welcome to Mindshift Talk Radio.
Hello, Stacey. Thank you for having me.
You are welcome. We are so honored to have you here.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
So, Sherilyn, as I said, I don't want to give too much information, but before you even tell us what you're going to be discussing, if you don't mind just telling our audience a little bit more about who you are.
Although I have many titles and labels, I am first and foremost a servant. And the titles of author, mentorship, media personality, mentor, speaker are just the titles and the labels and the ways that I express my servanthood. So with that, I'm grateful for the opportunity to be able to inspire and empower from the lessons that I've learned and some life lessons that I have been able to turn around into hardcore teaching lessons. So,
okay, awesome. So we know that you are the author of a book titled Unveiling the Mask. I need to hear about that. How did you come about that title, and tell us a little bit more about that?
Now, the book Unveiling the Mask is due out next summer. The book that I have authored by myself is Weekly Wisdom, 52 Ways to Live a More Fulfilled Life. But how I came up with the title for my company, Unveiling the Mask, as well as the book Unveiling the Mask, coming from an African-American point of view as a woman, we often tend to hide and disguise ourselves behind. We can hide behind our education. We hide behind our careers. We hide behind our material wealth. We hide behind our financial status or family stature. There's many things that we use to hide who we are for the simple fact that we don't know. And oftentimes we don't like ourselves. I believe that we use the mantra, oh, I love myself, and all you have to do is love yourself. Most often that has become the national anthem for African Americans, but very few know what that really means. Very few know what it entails of loving ourselves, and I find that many professionals do a disservice when they say love yourself, without giving tools on how to correctly love themselves. And there's no cookie-cutter approach. There's different avenues, but we've often hid behind that because if we had to really unveil the mask and deal with who we are, where we come from, our insecurities, maybe it's the color of our skin, maybe it's the lack of education or whatever it may be, we tend to hide behind that because we want the world to see this painted picture of perfection or this painted picture of success or whatever we have deceptively hid behind or created the mask. And what I tend to find out is once you start unveiling the mask, it's almost like a layer of an onion. The more layers that you peel back, you get to the core. But some of us have masks who were masks. So by the time we get to the core of who we are, we don't even know who we are, let alone like ourselves. And, you know, it's kind of taboo to say that in today's society, but the truth of the matter is we don't. And so that's why we got the we's and the I's and, you know, all these other things to expound on what was already perfect in the beginning.
And that can turn into a whole other show when you talk about the weaves, and it, you know, that's a whole other episode right there. That's going to be part two when you come back to the show. But, you know, you said something that was interesting because you said, you know, many of us don't know how to love ourselves, or we don't really know what that means. We hear it all the time. Like you said, it's almost cliche to hear, you know, you just have to love yourself. I love me. And you talked about how that is a mask. But one thing I even thought about when you were making that comment was that for some of us, you know, for many of us, it's not only the fact that we don't know how to love ourselves, but it could be a possibility, you know, there may be a possibility that we are looking for other people to tell us who we are. You know, sometimes I think we can walk around so lost and so blinded to who we truly are that we're looking for someone else to define us. You know, hopefully, like you said, we're wearing the weaves and the eyelashes and doing all this other stuff because we want someone else to show us our value, and we don't know our own value. So I'm really interested to hear what you're going to discuss with our guest tonight. So what is going to be your message for tonight?
Just to back up a little bit, what you said is very key and vital because we often do seek validation from others because we don't know who we are. As we grow up, as we're infants, we take on who our parents say we are.
Mm-hmm.
As we grow up into adolescence, we tend to our peers of who they say, who we say we are, because we start hanging around a certain group or we start seeking certain groups to be accepted by. As we get older in adulthood, we start looking for men or the opposite sex to tell us who we are. So we often don't know who we are, but here's the deal. You are the representation of what the world treats you. So if you don't set the value on who you are or what your value is worth, then no one else will measure up to the value because they're always going to price below what it is that you're worth, and you're going to always accept that because you don't know it. So what better way to do the work and define who you are, not who your mother say, not who your church say you should be, not and define. And one key thing that will lead into what I'm talking about tonight, we often say, and I'm kind of, I guess I'm taking over the devil advocate a little bit, sorry, but often say that I know who I am. I'm just going to be who God tells me to be, or I want a man to love me like God loves me. Okay, come on now. You don't even know what that is. You don't even know the measure or the depth of the love that we say or who we say God says we are, because if we did, you would walk it. There would be no doubt about it. You would walk it, and or you wouldn't seek that love or attention from another man because you would know who you are. Those are nice things that we have been told repetitiously, and we know that it's good to say, but we have no clue of what we're saying when we say that. And, for example, how can you have a man love you like Christ loved the church when the first time someone looks at you cross-eyed, you're ready to go off?
Right.
So there's a difference in that. And part of me coming into unveiling the mask is because dealing with my childhood pain, I was sexually molested by my stepfather. And I know that this is a topic that is very taboo. So when I had the dream of writing a story about my life, I kept saying, well, what would I title it? And what would make this book so different, or how could I share my story that I could really create some type of thinking outside of what society says. And I really believe that society does a disservice, because what I mean by that is we often hear many celebrities or political figures or entertainers come out and say and share their story that they've been molested, whether it's a brother, a family member, or whoever it may be. We often hear that, and that's all we hear. Oh, it was my brother, or it was my sister, and then that's it. So it almost seems, and I'm not indicating, I'm just saying that it almost seems as if one is saying this as some form of sympathy plea or celebrity ploy. Not saying that that is the case, because sexual molestation is a devastating effect, especially if you've been through that. But I wanted to create some type of social thinking outside of what we normally hear on the radio, outside of what the media says, outside of what various books says. And the only way that I felt that I could do that would be not to point the blame and say what the government isn't doing or what the parent isn't doing, and take a look at myself and share my story in such a way that it would create the change, because I truly believe that change starts within. And so I didn't want to write a book and talk about, oh, how bad, oh, why is me, and look what happened. I wanted to book a book to say that, yes, this has happened, but this is the solution. I don't feel that a lot of books offer solutions. I believe they tell the story and then leave you hanging, and they may often offer a reference or several guys of call-in numbers, but when you're laying down with those demons at night, that phone is not going to help me. So I wanted to send out a book and a message that was like, you know, you had to take notice. It would get the attention of the church, because many of us, as African Americans, we have been taught with the stigma that what happens in this house stays in this house. And that has led us to the crisis that we are now in, the national epidemic of sexual molestation. We've also been taught as African Americans that we value and honor family by any means necessary. It doesn't matter who that family is. So you have uncles, long-time molesters, grandfathers, grandmothers, aunts, uncles, long-time molesters that the family know about, but they say nothing because that's Uncle Tom or that's Pawpaw George or whatever, and we're not going to bring shame to the family. So now we've come to the point to where we're choosing the molester over the molested. We've gotten to the point now that if the mother, if a daughter has been molested in the home, such as in my case, where I was molested by my stepfather and my mother chose to stay with the molester, what message does that send to the molester? Is that he's more important than the seed that I brought into this world. Good penis and financial stability is more important than my child's life. And in many cases, we're choosing the molester over the molested in the churches. We're keeping the good deacon and the good preacher name lifted up and not exposing the crime that he's doing behind the pulpit. And once, if it is exposed, then everybody rallies behind the minister and ostracizes and shuns the molester. So what message is that really sending to the world? In addition to that, many times being molested leads to high divorce rate. It leads to a lot of issues sexually, female issues as far as fibroids, cysts, and tumors, all kinds of things, because when you have been molested, then you're dealing with other demons such as anger, guilt, and shame. And because we have been told, the title of the book is Unveiling the Mask, Stripped in Silence and Never Shattered, because we've been silenced and hidden our shame and we've remained silent throughout the years. Now all of that is eroding and backing up into our body and feeding on Holthe's tumors and cysts and all kinds of things, that we're becoming a society of hysterectomies. We're losing the very value of what creates and what makes you uniquely different as a woman. And so I wanted the book to really touch over the on the heart of what Unveiling the Mask was, not only just to say that this happened to me and that I'm going to tell my story, but I wanted it to resonate with others in a way that here's the solution, this is what we need to do, and then, yes, we do have to place accountability, but accountability starts in the home. Accountability then starts in the communities, and it starts in the school, and then it starts outside. You know, it's kind of ironic that we're having this conversation. My daughter, who's in the 10th grade now, was able to bring, they have some type of child development course now, and I think it's throughout many schools within the nation, but where they are being taught how it feels to bring home a baby and cater to the baby, and the baby cries and does all these things for the weekend. Now, they did not ask for parental permission for my child to take part in this course as a teen awareness or pregnancy awareness course. They didn't ask mm-hmm. for that permission. But mm-hmm. it's ironic that when I first started the campaign and started Unveiling the Mask, how many churches and schools closed the door on sexual molestation and domestic violence talk because they was afraid of being sued by the parents or what kind of outcry would that be. But it's okay for you to allow my child to play house. Now, I'm not saying that there's not a good message in that and what they're doing, but the mindset of society is we don't want to rattle any cages. We don't want to shake any fence. So we don't want to have this taught in our schools. I even went so far as I was doing the promo for the book and working on a documentary with the book. A reverend told me, he says that you're not going to get very far in churches with that because we want to elevate our parishioners to living the good life. I said, well, how can you deal with the good life without dealing with the life that we have here when 97% of your congregation, male and female, have experienced this in some form or fashion? And it even mm-hmm. talks about it with Tamar and Amnon in the Bible.
And before you tell that story, Sherilyn, I just want to jump in really quick and just do a station ID and let our guests know you're listening to Mind Shift Talk Radio at mindshifttalkradio.com. Tonight we have our special guest. All righty, Sherilyn, we'll go ahead. I just wanted to do that pause before you went into that story because I'm waiting for this.
Okay. So I co-wrote a chapter called in a book, Sister Faith, with Bunny DeBarge. And in that, we talked about Tamar and Amnon in the Bible, how she was raped by her brother and then ostracized. And many churches don't even touch base on that. They don't even, you know, talk. They talk about the land of milk and honey and, you know, prosperity and all that. But how can you deal with the body without dealing with every aspect of the body? It's like when you get a toothache. If you do not cater to or seek need help or remedy for that toothache, left alone, that tooth will then affect the rest of the body. So how can you deal with a part of the body and not deal with all of it? And so what I have found out, because I've been, you know, working with politicians, and many of them don't know. Yeah, they know someone who's been molested, or, yeah, they know, but then they turn it like, okay, you were 5, get over it. That happened to you when you were 8, you're 42, get over it. So how can you get over it when you've never been taught to? All you've been taught to is suppress and hide the emotions that is dealing with that. And so the impact of sexual abuse, what I like to call the sexual imprint. And I have a course that I teach women who have been sexually abused, and it's called the Pleasure Principle course, because the body is miraculous. And the woman's womb area is her heart center. For a man, the heart is, you know, in his chest. For a woman, the heart is her womb. That's where life grows. That's where creativity exists. That's where her intuition lies. That is her heart, the control tower of a woman. And so when that control tower has been infected and neglected, then it cannot fully operate and function as the control tower. The unique thing about sexual molestation and abuse is that when you have been raped or have some type of trauma to you, that memory is stored in your body. 9 times out of 10 is stored in your womb area. And sometimes we try to block it out because it was so traumatic, or we try to forget it or hide it, whatever the case may be. But then there is some point in time, what I always tell you, people, that want that thing that you sweep up under the rug will one day in life trip you. Because at some point, whether it's through intimacy, whether it's through a relationship or some type of memory jog, those cells will then start interacting that memory. And so when your husband or your significant other says something to, unbeknownst to him, what has taken place in your past, or touches you in a way, unbeknownst to him, what has taken place with you, you automatically have a reaction. And you jump on him as if he's the molester. But because you have not taken care of the infestation that has been building, and I'm trying to say all this quickly, but because you have not taken care of that, it is now infected. I found that women who've been molested have a high divorce rate because they don't know how to deal with that. They 9 times out of 10, you either switch to promiscuity, or you no longer want the sexual interaction whatsoever, because now the intimacy has been taken out of it, and you are now engaged in the act of it, if that makes sense.
Hey, I got a question, Sarah.
Uh-huh.
I know you said a lot of, it seemed like you're saying like a lot of churches have come against the book, and I do know churches that do talk about the subject. I'm trying to figure out, in the book, I'm assuming you're exposing, like the Unveil the Mask, I guess exposing the reality of it. But then you said also that you do share solutions in there. So I'm trying to figure out what is it that, why the churches and why are people coming against it rather than being for it?
You know, that's a good question. The book isn't out yet, so my reaction of what I'm finding out is that it's simply the topic of it. Mm-hmm. It's more so, it has become so taboo in our society, especially with churches, because let's keep it real. I'm not saying all, so I don't want to give that misconception that all churches or all African-American churches are like that, because that's simply not the case. But the majority of sexual abuse is happening within the church home.
Mm-hmm.
You have pastors, ministers, deacons, people that hold some type of high status within churches that are actually also pedophiles.
Mm.
You have, you know, and so of course they don't want that out there.
Right.
Because then that exposes them. So it's not even about them even listening to the solution, because it has to expose them. And so when someone does step forward, it's automatically, oh that troublemaker, that Jezebel, or that hooker. I mean, now all of a sudden, she's been outcast.
Mm-hmm.
And all she's doing is seeking comfort. And the last I thought of, my favorite book told me, well, the church was a place to go to seek that refuge. Not really. Not really, because many churches have their cliques, they have their picks, and they have their chooses. And so if you don't fit that profile or you're not coming in and going along with their program, then they will try to make it seem like you're trouble. And many times the victims often, you know, life is already hard dealing with a lifelong sentence of sexual abuse. So many times they don't want to bring more shame to them. Or now they have children, or now they have family or mothers who they're trying to protect, so they go on off in silence and go on somewhere else. But yeah, that doesn't heal or take care of what has happened.
That goes right with the title, Dad, Unveil the Bass, because that's what you're doing. Is it a faith-based book?
It's a it's a independent book, meaning that it's my story. Yes, it is. It's not. It's nonfiction,
mm-hmm.
And I wrote it for all genres. For like I said, there's so many across my travels and speaking that or church. They go to church and they say, "Oh wow, my goodness, you know, I wish you can come to our church and talk about this because this needs to be going on." I've had women come up to tell me that they have fathered children. I mean, their molester, who's the pastor or the deacon, is also their lover, dad, and baby daddy.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, it's crazy. But at the same time, and many times, we know this is going on. We know it's going on in our homes. We know that this is going on, but I would rather have financial stability and have a peace of a man. And anyone who's molesting children is not a man, so I don't know how women even rationalize that. But I would rather have hard legs next to me than to jeopardize that because of losing him. I've heard where women have put their children out and chose the man or accused them of coming on to the man. How does an 8-year-old come on to a 32?
Thank you. And you know, before I go into this, but, you know, ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Mindshift Talk Radio with Stacey Emery, Billy Miller, and Dr. Ayo Kedar. Tonight's special guest is certified transformation coach, speaker, and author, Ms. Sherilyn Vaughn. And you know, it's just interesting what you're talking about, Sherilyn, because everything that you're sharing is things that we're well aware of. But like you said, it's kind of just swept under the rug. There's a lot of things that people just don't really want to address. And even when you were telling the story about how, you know, it's unfortunate that many people can't go to the church anymore, excuse me, to find refuge, it's really sad. I remember there was a time, you know, some years ago I attended this church and there was this issue I had with someone that I guess was considered, you know, a high person in the church that was just saying some very inappropriate things and making passes and so forth. And I remember talking to a friend about it, just saying, you know, this is really bothering me, you know, because he's saying this and saying that, and his wife goes to church and the kids are in the choir and, you know, all this, but, you know, he's saying these things. And I remember him saying to me, you know what, well, you can't say anything because if you bring it up, then everyone's going to look at you like you've done something wrong, you know, because they're not going to believe you over him. You know, he's a deacon of the church, and he's doing this, and he's on this board and that board, and they're going to look at you like the homewrecker. And I was like, that is so crazy, because here I am just coming to church. And at that time, you know, just really, you know, how you that brand-new Christian and everything is so exciting and everything. You just want to talk about the Lord all day, 24/7, and you're just so excited. And then you run into that, and you're like, how could this be a well-known, respected person of the church doing something like this? And so I'm curious, like, when you're out speaking and you're meeting these individuals, how often do you come across men or women that are turned away from the church, that don't even want to be involved in the church or not interested in the message because of situations like that, because of hearing about the whole, you know, the rumors with the Catholic priest molesting the young boys and stuff like this that takes place? How often do you come across people that say, you know what, I don't even want to hear any of that, because it's almost like hypocrisy at this point?
98.9% of the time. The thing about it is today's churches have become the new socialized club.
Mm.
Meaning, like I said earlier, they have their cliques and their chooses. You have the prestigious and you have the, if you're not of a social or a certain financial status, if you don't live in a certain neighborhood, if you, you know, if your family wasn't coming from a long line of pastorship, I mean, they have so many cliques and chooses, it's no wonder that many of the churches are empty and the clubs are full. Because we go to church, or we go to church seeking refuge, because we have the day-to-day grind of just living life. I mean, every time you turn on the news, I call CNN for constantly negative news. Every time you turn on, something is happening. So we're seeking some type of refuge, and it's very disheartening when I go to a place of so-called worship and then I find out that people have their big eyes and the little U's. Because I don't dress a certain way. There's many times I go to church and I see a certain woman and all of a sudden she's been labeled the Jezebel or the homebreaker or whatever it may be, and look how she dressed. Well, look at all that makeup. And, well, how do you know she's ever went to church? How do you, you know, not everybody has a long history of attending church. So what happened is the pointing the finger and talking about taking that sister up under your wings. What happened to the mothers of the church? The mothers of the church have now become the top models of church because it's about whose hat is bigger and whose dress. What happened to the church? Because I think what we call church is traditional religion. And that's where the problem lies.
Well, I think this is a good point, because for me it's kind of hard for me to get to probably get into discussion, because I'm not, I don't do church. And I think at the end of the day, because, you know, everybody has their own religion or what have you, but I think at the end of the day it's really about a title and a person's preconceived notions, or just, you know, automatic, just like being a doctor or a policeman or a firefighter, or, you know, whoever it is, whatever in your mind, you know, that person is built up to be, you know, because when I think of a pastor, I don't think of a holy saint. So I think it's just a title.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's a person.
Right.
So I don't get into the whole. So I think that really is about a person's, that's a title. And when it comes to abuse, you know, where does trust lie because of, you know, the titles that people are given, or, you know what I mean? So I think this,
right. And the titles is just that. You know, I can sit up here and give myself a title and put some enthusiasm behind it, and everybody will call me that. Who did the research to really find out is that's what I am? I mean,
exactly.
Nowadays, no one is holding anybody accountable.
Mm-hmm.
If I talk a certain way and I speak emphatically and, you know, act like I got a little bit of sense, people will follow me based on what I say my title is. But a title is just that. And I find out now in the so-called church, many people have self-titled themselves. There's no longer do you have to have the calling. What happened to being called, chosen, and sent? And you don't have to do all that anymore. You just choose yourself and get you a church and get some followers, and it go on from there. But here's the problem, and this is what I found out going through my story. I remember when I was 8 years old and I told my mom what had happened, and at that time she was shocked, didn't know what to do, but then later she came back in, accepted him back into the life, and, you know, now I'm growing up bitter and resentful and all kinds of issues. I'm really confused right now, because I'm like, how can you choose what I perceive to be a monster over your child? And I was always brought up and always heard that God don't like ugly, and you got to live right, and you got to tell the truth. You know, all these Christian traditional doctrine that have been given to me. And so a few years ago, as I was writing this book, because it really has been a process, I could not write the book without putting in forgiveness. Now, here I am, who I created my business. I've been speaking on the circuit since 2006. I've been doing self-development work and working on myself for the past 10 years. So, you know, I got forgiveness down pat, or so I thought. And so I'm working on, I remember I was talking to a mentor of mine, and she gave me a forgiveness exercise to do. And I said, well, I don't need to do that. I got forgiveness down pat. And so, but because I knew she was going to ask me on our next call, I wanted to be a woman of my word and say I did it. So I called myself real nonchalantly, just going through the motion. And I'm sitting in my my bathroom, and I remember hearing, tell the truth. And I said, well, tell the truth about what? Mm-hmm. I've been speaking and telling my story. I am telling the truth about it. So what truth are you talking about? And I hear, tell the truth. The mm-hmm. third time, it was more so a command than a question. And I said, I'm totally lost. Tell the truth about what? And just as I know that I was sitting in, you know, my shower, and just as I was sitting there, I remember, it's almost like a Spike Lee movie. You know how Spike Lee early movies, no one ever walked, they just kind of glided. And so I remember being put back and forth in front of my house where I grew up in, that I was molested. And it seemed like I didn't touch, open any doors or walk up any steps. Everything just kind of opened up as I was going in. And as I went into the house, the smells and everything came back. And I remember walking into the room where the molestation took place, and my stepfather had his closet in my bedroom, and I kept hearing someone crying. And so as the door opened, there was a little girl with her head bent down against her knees, and she was crying. And I hear the voice again and says, now, would you please tell the truth? And I kept saying, I don't get it. What am I missing? And he said, touch her. And when I touched her and the little girl lifted her head up, it was me at the age of 8 years old. And he said, now tell her everything that you needed and wanted someone to tell you. And before I knew it, I was crying and just blabbering, and I was telling her everything I wanted to hear, you know, that I wanted to hear at that age. And I heard for the final time, now, will you please tell the truth? And I said, God, I was angry at you because you didn't protect me. I was taught if you do a good, I didn't kill, I didn't steal, I was a good little girl to the best of my ability, and you didn't protect me. You let this happen to me. Well, I had been taught up, as we spoke about earlier in religion, that you don't question God. You don't question him, and you don't get mad at him, and you don't ask certain things from him because he's all-knowing and he's almighty and he'll strike you down and all these kind of things. Well, if he was all-knowing and almighty, didn't he know I was pissed all those years? But because I didn't understand the value, and many people are going to church and they're being molested from 5, age 3, age 8, age 7, and yes, they've been brought up in the church because I was brought up in the church, and I knew how to do all the hand movements. I knew how to do the two-step and the three-step and the five-step, and I knew how to wear the mask as if I was living righteously and sold out for Christ, but at the same time, there was a major part of me that didn't trust him because he let this happen. So it's a grave disservice when we tell women or men who've been molested, oh, just turn it over to God. Well, how are you going to turn something over to someone you don't trust? And how can you hide that if he's all-knowing and almighty? Don't he know that you don't trust him? But many of us are afraid to even come out with that. Many of us are afraid to open our mouth and say that because, oh, my goodness, that's blasphemy. Well, if I have an individual relationship with him, then he knows where I'm at, and he knows I have an issue with trust. So that's why I go through life and have life lessons that he has prepared to get me to that point. But so many of us are untrusting, and we're holding some type of resentment toward our higher power, whoever that may be for you, that you can't fully open up to trust. And if you can't trust him, you can't trust the man. Because the man is the one that did it. So
So how do you trust your leadership? Many of us are going to church with one eye open and one eye because we're just waiting for somebody to mess up. We're waiting for something to happen for us to say, see, yeah, I knew it. But how do we stop that cycle? And the only way we can stop this cycle is to really dig deep and get in and stop, you know, with all of this, what I call shenanigans of living the good life. You can't live the good life miserable. You can't live the good life just existing. And many of us are just walking around as zombies. We're not living, we're existing.
Hey, Cheryl. The book, well, it sounds like it's good for a person that's been abused, but it also sounds like it's good for a person, for anybody to read, just for the awareness of it. I want to know, what are your expectations for the book? In other words, when a book come out, people read it, what do you want to happen? What is expected to happen as a result of reading this book as a whole?
Number one, I want to open up the mind and get people talking in a different dialect than what we've been doing. And so what I mean is I don't want people to say, oh, yeah, this is a good read, and then set it on the coffee table for decorations. I want not only for us to open up the book and read it, and if this is you, that you have been molested, or I want you to then share your story. I want you to start talking. I want you to learn how to forgive. If you're holding that animosity towards the maybe it's your mother who didn't believe you, your aunt, your grandmother, I'm not quite sure who it may be, I want you to start opening that dialogue up. If you know that your sister or someone in your family has been doing this, I want you to have a conversation with that person and say, you know what, I'm putting you on blast. Your secret is no longer safe with me. And because that's really the truth of the matter is we've keeping the family secret a secret. For generation after generation, you know, grandmother was molested at 12. And at that time, it wasn't even considered molestation. It was considered norm for an older man to have sex with a younger woman and to have children by her. So when it happens to mother and she doesn't say anything or she goes and tells her mother, she said, well, it happened to me. Get over it. And so now this mother, it can't even have that conversation with her daughter because now it has been taken up as the norm. It's the family norm. So I want the conversations to start speaking. I want to hold schools. I want to hold churches. And I want to hold government responsible. It's mind-boggling to me that you can run over a dog and get more jail time than you will molesting a child. That's mind-boggling to me. But this is the society that we say that we live in, and people say, well, who am I? Well, we choose, last time I checked, we choose our political figures. Last time I checked, we pretty much chose our leaders in the community, our leaders in the church. If we can stand up and say it's outrageous for police brutality or police racial injustice, why can't we stand up against those same political figures, those same religious leaders, and say, not on my watch? We're going to have to do something different because the change starts with you. It starts in your household. It starts in your community, and then it spreads along. This book, I'm working here in Missouri where I am with my political figures here to get stricter laws. I'm not going to settle for that. I mean, how is it possible that a here in Missouri, the state of Missouri, all you have to do is 1 year jail time and a recreative, some type of rehabilitation clause, and you're back out on the street to molest again. So we have to, last I checked, we are responsible for who we put in office. we are responsible to hold those people accountable to what we say do. So I have now here on in the state of Missouri what I call Vaughn's Law, which I plan on, and the book would just further my cause, of having this be instituted as a national law, that we are holding our leaders, we're holding people who molest. There's no, how do you get to be a repeat offender? The reason why you're a repeat offender is because you've just been slapped on the wrist, and we're not sending them the message like this is abominable to us or this is would not be tolerated. That's not the message that the pedophiles are getting when they go to jail. The message that they're getting is, shame on you, you got caught. Get better at it next time.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm just so thankful that we're having this conversation, you know, Sherilyn, because, again, I mean, you've said so much tonight. I mean, we've talked about the issue with molestation and with sexual abuse and so forth. And initially when we decided to have this conversation, I said I was very excited to have it because I think it's a conversation that it definitely needs to be had or held. I think it's especially when it comes to mind shift because, you know, we go back to the premise of this show. It's about creating that paradigm shift and seeing things from different perspectives. And I know initially when Sherilyn and I talked about her coming on the show, she said, you know, I do share a different perspective and I see things a little different than most people may see it. And I said, that's the whole reason why we need you on this show to share your story and to talk more about this topic, because I think sometimes with many topics and many issues affecting society, we can sometimes get caught up and seeing it from one perspective. It's one-dimensional almost in a sense where, you know, society kind of frames our mindset and our vision in terms of how we view things. And honestly, I can say for myself, I've never really looked at it in terms of saying, you know, looking at how often we do choose the molester or really looking at that trust issue and the healing process that needs to take place in those that have been affected by it. Because, you know, when we hear about healing, normally it just kind of stops at the psychological healing. You know, okay, talk about what happened and say who did it and how does that make you feel? You know, the very clinical approach to things, but not really getting to the deep issue. And when you talked about that trust piece, you know, it made me think back when you were talking about the situation you had about being honest about what you felt. I think that's the main issue that many individuals, not only those that were physically affected by it, you know, that were actually the victims of it, but also those that are connected to them, because it doesn't just affect the individual that it happened to. It affects the one that was molested, the one that was the molester, in your case, your mother, if there were any siblings. It can affect so many different people, and it's kind of hard for us to say, okay, let's have these conversations. It's hard enough for many of us to even look in the mirror and be honest with ourselves about how we feel on a day-to-day basis, much less confront an issue or a topic like this in terms of how it's affecting a family, how it's affecting other relationships, how it affects you on the workplace. I mean, it just, the list can go on and on. So I'm thankful that you were that transparent to be able to come on the show and share your story, but also I have to applaud you for what you're doing, even going as far as the Vaughn Law and really forcing all of us that are listening to this message to be, you know, to hold others accountable, to hold our leadership accountable, to hold those people, like you said, that we vote into office to be more accountable and to really bring awareness to the topic. You know, I love when Tyler Perry was on Oprah Winfrey talking about his story and he shared, you know, his experience, and many people were just baffled, like, you know, we don't even think about men being affected this way. And so I'm sure when you're out speaking, people are just like, wow. And again, I'm sitting here just amazed, I guess to say the least, at how you're sharing this, because you're definitely taking a different approach. And I can go on and on because this has just been a very interesting topic. And, again, I thank you so much for joining us tonight. And truly, it has been an honor to have you here. I know we only have a few minutes left, so I'm going to open it up for Dr. Ayo and Billy to share any final thoughts or to ask any questions that you may have of Sherilyn. I'll go to pass it over to you guys.
I'll let Ayo go first, ladies first.
She may have been disconnected, I'm not sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I think when the book come out next summer, and It sounds very interesting, and I know there's more answers in the book, but I do see how it is going to be hard to deliver that message, because just listening to the show, and I understand where Sherilyn's coming from, but I can see how it could be easily misunderstood that she's saying mm-hmm. don't go to church. And I think that's where a lot of the defense is going to come from. A lot of it's going to come from because they don't want to be exposed, like she said, because of the, you know, they want to mm-hmm. put the image. But also, mm-hmm. I think some people are going to misunderstand, like when she hit the traditions and stuff, hearing the message of church is bad versus the message of the molestation and all of that.
Right, and I don't want to come across as I'm saying church is bad, because there are churches that are out there in the trenches. There are churches that are speaking on that, but there are many what I like to call storefront churches, or mass temples, as you will, that are just using that as their place to play, mm-hmm. and not necessarily reach out to the people, the women and the men and the children that are hurting. And so I don't want anyone to misunderstand that. I come to find out, because I do go to church, but I found a church where I could be myself, where I can let that down. And then I had to come to the realization that it's also, yes, I have to worship and fellowship with other parishioners, but my church don't just open up on Sundays. My church don't just open up on Wednesdays for Bible study. It's an individual mm-hmm. relationship that I have with God. And I had to release of what I, all the preconceived notions of what I thought I had to act like and be like, and just get real with my higher being and say, look here, you know, what's the deal? And he met me where I was at. For so many years, I was trying to pretend mm-hmm. I was somewhere else because I thought I had to fake it, you know. And once I really understood that, hey, he'd been knowing this all along, that was a huge weight that was lifted off of me. In my book, I don't want to just give the illusion that we're talking about molestation. I'm talking about forgiveness and how to forgive, because a lot of people have an issue with that. It's more to just saying, oh, I forgive him, and moving on with your life. What I've come to find out, just like with healing, just like with spirituality, there's no graduation for forgiveness. I had been on the road for forgiveness for 10 years, and that particular night had a whole nother level of forgiveness. So there's no graduation point. When you graduate from spirituality and graduate from healing and graduate from forgiveness, you're out of here. You're in the next transition. And so I have to realize that it went deeper. And a lot of people are holding the concept that forgiveness is about agreeing with what they did or saying it's okay. It has nothing to do with that person because they're living their life. My molester was living his life, had kids. He wasn't thinking about me. He was not thinking about me. But I had to relieve that and realize, you know what, the more I stay angry at you, then you're steady molesting me. 40 years later, you're steady molesting me because all I think about, all of my anger and all of my energy is focused on many ways to kill you off. And that's not working because what it was doing was killing me. I couldn't hold a decent relationship. I was angry. So it speaks on many different avenues.
Well, Sherilyn, we thank you for joining us tonight. Again, if you could please, before we close out, just tell our listeners how they can get in touch with you and get more information about you.
Well, I have a new website that is coming up that will be active actually November the 15th, a lot of stuff, which will be called Vinology Live. You can reach my office at area code 323-580-4604, or you can hit me on Twitter or Facebook at Sherilyn Vonn, CHERILYNVONN, on Facebook and Twitter.
All right, Sherilyn, well, thank you again for joining us tonight. Ladies and gentlemen, we thank you for those of you that were listening by phone as well as those of you that have listened to us in the chat room. We ask that you just continue to share this message with your friends and family members, anyone that's in need of a mind shift. Make sure they're here every Monday night at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Mind Shift Talk Radio. You guys be blessed. Talk to you next week.
Mind.